Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello everybody, welcome back. Episode 181 of CJ Evolution. Pat Fitzgibbons here, host and creator of the show. Whatever you were doing, wherever you were at, thank you for tuning in. Special thanks to all those first responders out there, brave men and women, sacrificing every day and night to keep us safe. Thank you for what you do. Trust me, it doesn't go unnoticed. Thank you for tuning in. We continue to grow because of listeners like you, so I sure do appreciate it. You know, we talk so much on the podcast about overcoming obstacles, you know, getting past those problems in your life, personally and professionally, tackling fear, tackling your fear, getting over that fear to help you achieve your goals. My next guest, Peggy Seelfon, is an amazing individual. She's a personal development coach, speaker, and author that faced adversity like most of us in our lives. It was an amazing time talking to her. She's going to give you tips and suggestions to be a better person and to reinvent yourself. So I give you the one, the only, Peggy Seelfon. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have Peggy Seelfon on the show. She is a wellness specialist and a personal development coach. Very successful woman. Peggy, welcome.
Thank you so much, Patrick. I'm really thrilled to be here with you today. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm so excited for you to be here. I love what you're doing. We were talking a little bit off the air for a while, and thank you so much for what you're doing. I mean, for those of you, for those listeners out there who don't know who you are, can you give us a little bit of your background?
How much time do we have? No, I actually started out in New York City, lived a very, very stressful existence. Mm-hmm. And over the years, I began training in a lot of different modalities to deal with my own survival through the challenges I was facing. And so I, over the years, trained in both Western traditions and Eastern traditions. And so now my work is really a blend of everything from psychology and functional medicine and nutrition to Eastern approaches, meditation, yoga, Qigong, mindfulness, and spirituality. So I work with people all over the world to help them really escape from anxiety, to be able to reduce stress levels so that they can be happier, healthier, and more productive.
Mm-hmm. Now, we were talking a little bit off the air about mindfulness. I want to hit on that again, in negativity. You know, Peggy, in law enforcement, in criminal justice, law enforcement officers see, you know, a lot of negative. That's part of the job. It's a big part of the job. How do officers stay positive, or what would be your advice? I mean, because as far as, you know, staying positive and changing that mindset.
It's really interesting. I think the first step is really just being aware of all the negativity, and it is part of the job. Yeah. I've done ride-alongs with police officers in my area, and I'm astonished at the things that they see that I was looking at the same scene. I did not see what they saw. Mm-hmm. So there is a sensitization that's really part of the job, which I totally understand. But if you broaden that sensitization to mindfulness and more awareness about the fact that there is a balance. So yes, there's things we judge as negative and things that might be law-breaking. And mm-hmm. then on the other side of the coin, there's some very positive, wonderful things. And being able to stop for a moment and appreciate those is the way you begin to train your brain to recognize that there is good and there's bad. Mm-hmm. And both exist. And it's a matter of balancing it so that you don't just get caught up in the negative.
Yeah. And the one thing that you just really, it's so simple that you just said. And yeah, the first thing is awareness, because I think some people don't realize how negative they are. Not just in law enforcement. I mean, any person out there who's listening, you know, yeah, maybe they're not aware that they're you know, so negative or you know, they.
Well,
they,
and that's a really big part of it is the self-talk. A lot of people don't really, they're not aware of that inner voice that's constantly saying, well, I can't do this. Oh, that's awful. Or they're judging this person or that situation. And as a result, they're not really seeing the bigger picture or being able to embrace something. For instance, if you see someone who's doing something that is to you really horrible. Like, for instance, there was a situation on a New York City subway. There was a dad sitting with two young kids, and the kids were wild and reckless and running all over and really being noisy and out of control. Mm-hmm. And the passengers were really getting upset that this father did nothing. And somebody finally said something to the father, and he said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. They just lost their mother, and we're all just trying to get through this." Oh. Well, it completely changed the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great story. I mean, yeah, you're right. Jeez. Spirituality. You talk about that too, Peggy. How important is that? You know,
I think it's really a big part of who mm-hmm. we are and how we move through this life of ours. And it's not about religion. It's really about just understanding the connection of mind and body mm-hmm. and allowing us to really embrace the notion that we really are spiritual beings having a human experience. So we're an expression of the source in our bodies, in our minds. And I think a lot of people get disconnected from that. And it takes them into their ego. It takes them into decisions that are perhaps not in alignment with mm-hmm. that mind-body connection and that ability to really be in their wholeness. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people kind of get separated, get stuck in certain patterns of behavior, especially police officers who are yeah. stressed and mm-hmm. fearful and dealing with so many different things. So I think you get stuck in those patterns. Not that I think it, I know it, mm-hmm. Because it's part of the neurosciences that we're seeing. It literally becomes patterns grooved into brain responses and reactions. Mm-hmm. And that's when awareness needs to really come into play so that you can begin to interrupt those patterns and allow yourself to come back to the mind, body, and the spiritual aspect of who you are. It just takes you to another level. And look, as police officers, I think you realize that you're serving something greater than yourself.
Exactly.
And that's
mm-hmm.
really a lot of what spirituality is about.
Now, getting back to, I'm a firm believer that you are who you hang out with, you associate with. How important is it, Peggy, in your opinion, to surround yourself with the right people in your life? Because if you're surrounded by negativity all the time and you have feed off each other. So I really do believe that it's so important to surround yourself, with the right people, the people that are, pumping you full of good and positive instead of negative.
Absolutely. It's really important. Again, it comes back to awareness, yeah. noticing who you're spending time with. And Jim Rohn, who is a wonderful personal development coach, once said that you are the average of the five people you spend the most time mm-hmm. around. So if you're not happy with who you are and you want to change it, look who you're spending time with. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a matter of getting new friends or changing your relationship with your families, because sometimes family members can be toxic.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I was telling you a little bit before we started the show. And I love my brothers and sisters in law enforcement out there, but a good chunk of my friends are not in law enforcement. And I did that intentionally because getting back to, we see so much negative. Well, there's people in my life that have anything to do with criminal justice and law enforcement. And again, this isn't a dig on law enforcement or criminal justice, but I needed that in my life to have other people in my life that weren't seeing that negativity every day out on the street and dealing with, the worst sometimes. People don't call us when things are going great. People call us
I totally
when,
agree
when things
with you.
Are bad.
It's actually, it's one of my criticisms right now about the world of technology that we live in. I love technology and I hate technology mm-hmm. because it's feeding us with all these news and information that's sensationalized, that's negative. Some is real, some isn't real. What's the truth? What isn't the truth? And what it's doing is it's constantly bombarding people with these thought processes that, first of all, cause stress, anxiety, mm-hmm. and fear. And when someone is fearful, it's really difficult to be aware, to be discerning, to really choose to behave in a certain way, because you lose certain functionality in your brain mm-hmm. when you're consumed with fear. It just stops your ability to really be present in the moment. You're in survival mode. And so you're just in high alert and reacting and not really able to make mindful, conscious decisions. Mm-hmm. So it's really amazing just the way our bodies and minds function and the type of environment that we submit to. So it's really important to balance that environment. Mm. And I talk a lot in my work about work-life balance. And I think what you're doing, Patrick, is really important because you figured it out. Mm. You realize this is my function. I need to be able to be proactive in doing the work that I do, but I need to balance that with an understanding that there's more than just these bad guys and these terrible things that are happening. And that's all we're seeing in the news and through technology. So we really do need to mindfully, intentionally go after looking at the positive things and connecting with people who are really positive and optimistic, doing great things, making a difference. And that's very uplifting for all of us.
Yeah. And getting out there, we were talking again about getting out there as officers, as police officers, is now is not the time. Whenever something happens in law enforcement, that's the time to engage, not disengage. So we need to get out there and try to change some of that perception that law enforcement has. You know, I mean,
absolutely.
So, and that's the time, you know, to get out there, engage. You talk about finding, you know, a path in your life. You've been through adversity. Everybody out there has been through adversity. How did you find your path, Peggy? I mean, how does the average person out there? Well, how did you find your path? And then we'll talk about
In my case, I think my path found me.
Okay.
But I think, you know, it really comes back to finding what you're guided to, that you're really good at, that you really enjoy, or that you're motivated to resolve in some way. And that adversity that we often face is what motivates us to find the solutions. And when we find the solutions, we want to shout them from the tops of the trees, from the tops of the mountains, and be able to share that. And, you know, what you said is really important about the fact that I see us all as resources for one another. We're people to people. And it's really important to have that human contact to develop those relationships and really be able to cultivate that in a way where we all feel supported by one another instead of paranoid or threatened. And I think we really need to start working on changing our whole cultural mindset because it's really going awry.
Yeah.
And especially with young children now, I'm seeing anxiety in kids as young as 7 and 8 years old.
Wow. And we talked about technology. I mean, it's nothing will ever, at least in my opinion, nothing will ever take the place of human interaction. It's just not going to take the place. And you've seen it, Peggy, you were talking about children. I read an article a couple of weeks ago about how children, grade school children, are having, and high school too, are having problems just communicating face to face. They're so used to being on their phone. They're so used
to
texting.
So funny.
You know, I mean, and they're having so much, not everybody, I'm not painting a brush on every kid out there. I'm just saying at the article I read, you know, said that there's an alarming amount of kids out there that can't communicate, that have problems communicating. I mean, it just baffles me.
It's absolutely true. In fact, it's one of the programs I'm doing next week for a school group. They're high school kids, in teaching them communication skills and how to relate and how to present. As they move through their life after high school, they're going to be looking for jobs or interviewing for colleges. They need to have these skills that aren't being developed. And I totally agree with you. It's really important that we learn how to look in each other's eyes and really talk to each other. And not only just talk to each other, but really listen, really hear what we're each saying.
Where do you think technology is going? Just your opinion. I never thought we would have more technology. And maybe you've thought this too. We got more technology in the palm of our hand than the Apollo 13 astronauts had.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
It's a crazy. But so where do you think we're going with this? I guess my point is, my direct question is, do you think it's going to get worse before it gets better?
I'm not sure. I mean, I do love technology. I love all the gadgets. And I mean, I'm the first one. I used to cover the Consumer Electronics shows.
Oh.
So that was a big deal.
Well, look what
we're
doing right now. We're using technology.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it does serve a purpose. Mm-hmm. And I love when it does make our lives better and improves things. What I'm seeing, though, is it's actually taking a toll on our health, on our ability to communicate person to person. And I'll tell you a really quick study that was done Microsoft did it actually in Canada, and they were looking at the attention span of the average adult.
Oh, geez.
And they found that it used to be like 12 seconds. And since the introduction of our smartphones in 2000, our cell phones, that has dropped to something like 7 seconds, which is supposedly less than that of a goldfish.
Oh, my
God. Now, I don't know how they test the attention span of a goldfish. But my point is, gosh, it's changing the way our brains are working. And what we're finding is that people are so addicted to their devices that and they're, you know, there's constant tweets and posts and emails and texts. And so what happens is you're working on a project and you're constantly being distracted and interrupted. Mm-hmm. And so what you're working on does not go into your long-term memory, because before it ever got to your long-term memory, you've gotten distracted. And what they're finding is that millennials are actually having more memory problems these days than senior citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows where it's going? Is it changing our biology? Is it, are we going to be like artificial intelligence robots? Is that going to be our human future? I don't know. It's kind of fascinating to watch just the changes in human development.
I don't know if you know who Tim Ferriss is.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, Tim Ferriss. So he was talking on a podcast, because I listen to his podcast along with other podcasts. He was talking, and I was listening to a podcast last year of his, where I think it's one long weekend, Friday to Monday, he does this once a quarter, I think. He does a digital detox.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you heard of that. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, so he doesn't take – he'll go on a trip. Like, he went to Hawaii once, and he didn't take a cell phone. He didn't do any, he didn't take anything. And then when he got to Hawaii, got off the plane, and since he didn't have any technology with him, he was forced to communicate with people. He was forced to ask people directions. He was forced to engage with people. And I thought that was a great idea. I mean, I haven't got to that point yet in my life.
Well, but actually what I...
But that's a great idea. That's a great
many
idea.
Of my clients, what I actually set up a protocol for them to at least sort of detox for an hour during their workday. Mm-hmm. Take an hour away.
I like
Nothing
that.
Tragic or monumental is going to happen in that hour. And you need... The brain needs a break. You need some time out from constant bombardment.
And I've tried to get better with this, Peggy. And I don't know if you do this. I know I do. I'm trying to get better with it. You know, you wake up in the morning. I told you I love to meditate, and then I'm on my phone. And instead, mm-hmm. what I need to do, and the more we're talking, is I just need to not get on the phone right away. It's not going anywhere. Those emails aren't going anywhere.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I got to get better at that.
and a good way, I mean, I think it's great that you begin your day with meditation, because that does set you up in a calmer, more focused way to begin your day. And maybe the next step would be to add some kind of affirmation to how you want to show up in your day, how you want to be for that day, because then you can take that affirmation and remind yourself a couple of times throughout the day. Mm-hmm. Wait, why am I doing this when I aligned myself with something else this morning? So let me stay on my alignment.
And what I do too, and I'd love to hear your morning routine, what you do. But what I do is the first thing I do is I wake up, and the first thing I do, Peggy, is I get into that gratitude state where I go and I think, you know, whoever you believe in, God, whatever, you know, I'm gratitude. I'm thankful for my health. First of all, I'm thankful that I woke up. I mean, you got to start with the basic stuff. You know, I'm breathing, I'm alive. And then I think, you know, I'm just grateful for my wife, my family, my health. So I think it's important. And I've learned that too throughout the years, is that for me, you know, I have to start each day in gratitude. And then, you know, do my meditation. And then I'm on the phone, but I'm going to work on that.
but that's a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. And gratitude is a very high vibrational level, which actually helps to release relaxation mm-hmm. hormones, feel-good hormones, which is a really helpful way to begin your day. Mm-hmm. And so during your day, when you feel the stress response to something where all these stress hormones are getting released and you're feeling your breathing increasing and your heart is racing and you're, you know, getting tense or uptight about something, go back to that, thinking about that gratitude mm-hmm. state. And it may just be a phrase or a word that you can remind yourself during the day that'll bring you right back to that state. Mm-hmm. And that will really help keep you more even keeled all day. And you actually function better. Mm-hmm. You function more optimally, mind and body. Everything works better when you're able to stay in a less stressed place. Now, we need some stress sometimes, you know, when you're facing a real challenging moment.
Yeah.
But we're not supposed to stay in that stress state. Mm-hmm. And that's when it becomes depleting. And too many people stay in that chronic state of stress, which is very debilitating. And it leads to illnesses.
Yeah. Yeah. You're exactly right. So what is your, what's your morning routine?
Pretty much similar to what yours is, actually. I do spend some time meditating before I even get out of bed in the morning. Mm-hmm. I have a program that I do quite a lot, and I sometimes do that actually before I get out of bed, which is called integrative relaxation. It's based on an ancient yogic technique called yoga nidra. Mm-hmm. And just 20 minutes of it is equivalent to 3 to 4 hours of deep restorative sleep. So I sometimes like to do that in the morning to just make sure I'm really in full energy, depending what I'm doing for that particular day. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I make sure that I start my day with some kind of healthful food. I usually like to start with just some water and lemon to just kind of kickstart my whole digestive system. Mm-hmm. And I used to, you know, jump out of bed and go right to my emails. And now I've really resisted that and give myself just some morning time to really just get my body started, getting my mind really aligned. And then oftentimes I will do exercise in the morning, or I also play competitive tennis. So sometimes my mornings, I just eliminate work first thing and I go out and have a tennis match, and then I come and I work, and I'll work into the evening. So it just, it varies because I have such a flexible schedule in terms of the different clients I see and the workshops I do and so forth. And so then, it's not consistent every day, but pretty much.
You have a good routine that gets you to, you know, sets the tone.
The base elements are there, exactly. Yeah.
And you just mentioned, and I know you you play competitive tennis, and you're also a pretty good golfer, is what I read. You're like, what's your handicap, Peggy? Come on.
19.
Oh, geez, that's good.
It's fun. It's a great sport. And for me, again, it's part of my balance because I am very intense in everything I do. I'm passionate about everything I do. And so for me, both tennis and golf have kind of a meditative quality, and being outdoors and being, you know, sunny days and getting some of that sunlight as well as the socialization of it is just really a wonderful balance for me.
And the other thing that I want to share with the listeners, you rode a motorcycle across the entire U.S. and Canada twice.
I did. Guilty as charged.
That must have been an amazing time. That must have been just, wow, I can't imagine. I mean, it must have been great.
You know, it's one of
Well, you did it twice.
I did it twice. I did it first when I graduated from college. That was mm-hmm. my first cross-country trip. And I was living in New York City at the time. And I did about 12,000 miles and ended up meandering up and down through the States, Canada, and out to Victoria Island. And then the second time was about 10 years ago. And I did pretty much the same thing, only I took 3 months and did 15,000 miles. And it was extremely uplifting because I really got to see people and meet people all over North America who are really just your everyday person living their lives happily, mm-hmm. doing what they do. And it was very uplifting to just meet all these different people, some on farms, some
just talking,
you know,
to
in
people
big cities.
And learning about them.
Exactly. Yeah. Hearing their stories, hearing their lives, and connecting with them. And so it was really rewarding. I learned so much. And also, we live in North America's beautiful. There's some incredible scenery. as you know, in Colorado.
Oh, yeah. Colorado's great. Now, you talked, one thing that you were, when you were talking, you're meeting people, a lot of people, and I know you talk about how do you overcome your fear, or how do people overcome fear, Peggy? I mean, because that's huge. I mean, a lot of people wouldn't do that. They wouldn't just go to, you know, get off their bike or whatever and pull over and, you know, talk to somebody and engage in that conversation. So when you go out there and train and you give, you know, advice to people, I mean, how, because fear is a big thing. You know that. How do
fear
people
is
over,
a big thing.
How do they overcome? How do people overcome their fear? Public speaking. I know you do a lot with public speaking. I don't mind public speaking, but there's a lot of people out there that are deathly afraid of it.
Do you know that the American Institute of Stress did some studies, and it showed that public speaking is the number one fear people have, more so than dying? That just boggled my mind when I saw that. But it really, it's hard to give you a quick answer because fear has a lot of different sources and really often comes from belief systems, sometimes comes from messages that we've gotten when we're kids, pre-programming where we believe we'll just never amount to anything or that we just don't do anything right. And so as we get into different situations that test those beliefs, it creates fear within us. And that's one aspect. But then there's also just survival kinds of fear. And so it really takes looking at where the fear is coming from and really accepting the fear, letting it happen. But again, coming back to mindfulness, when you're aware of the fear, you can begin to release it. And you can develop skills that interrupt those patterns of fear. So one of the skills is simply doing some breathing exercises. I actually have an online free audio that your listeners can download, and they can just go to 3minutestodestress.com and just download it to their phone and use it as often as they like. But just doing that for 3 minutes can stop that stress pattern, that anxiety pattern, that fear pattern, and change it. You're oxygenating better by just breathing more deeply. You're taking a moment to really just kind of quiet your mind, quiet your thoughts. And what's 3 minutes?
Yeah.
In 3 minutes, you can literally shift mind, body so that you're functioning better and you're back in control. Because when you're fearful, you're not in control.
Exactly. And I remember learning as a kid that most of the things we fear or most of the things that we're afraid of or think that are going to happen never come to fruition. No, they
don't.
So most of the thing, I mean, and I believe that. And so you have to, you know, conquer or try to conquer those fears. What I think it was Eleanor Roosevelt that said, do something every day that scares you. That's what gets keeps you alive. And, and that's how you learn, right? I mean, so you're not going to let... go ahead.
It's true. Yeah, no, and you're exactly right because so many clients that I deal with worry about everything.
Oh, yeah.
And none of the things that they're worrying about are real.
Yeah.
They're all, again, from these old patterns or old beliefs, and they get stuck in the worry. And worry is incredibly depleting.
Yeah.
You have no energy to do anything. You know, energy follows attention. So if all your attention goes into worry or negative thoughts, that fills your whole awareness above everything else. And then what else do you have? Nothing. Yeah. And so it's very paralyzing for a lot of people. And here's the good news. You can change it.
Yeah. Hence the
you
mindset.
Have
yeah.
the power, and it's your choice.
Yes.
And it's learning some skills. And as simple as this 3 minute to de-stress can change your day. It's amazing. In fact, I had a guy who I worked with who used to just be totally destroyed by the end of his workday. And he just wasn't present with his family in the evening. And I gave him a very simple technique. It took him 5 minutes when he would come home from work. And it literally changed his life with his family. Suddenly he was there. He was able to do things. He had energy. He wasn't all depleted. And so again, it's the hope I want to instill is that it's very possible to change it. It's first of all, wanting to, again, adversity motivates us.
Exactly.
And then secondly, reaching out. There's so many resources and so many ways that you can be supported. So I really encourage people, don't suffer.
Yes. And you talk about reinventing. That's part of the reinvention. You know, you're reinventing yourself. You don't have to be stuck in the same rut. You know, life is too short. You shouldn't be miserable, you know?
I mean, well, and I think a lot of people just feel like, well, that's my lot. this is
I don't believe that. You're the master of your destiny. That's exactly right.
And what you believe you can do, you can do.
You know, there's, I mean, I'm sure you've heard of The Secret, right?
Of course.
It talks about what you put out in the universe is what you're going to get back, right? So if you're thinking
negative,
I'm not talking we all just live oblivious and, you know, it's rainbows and, you know, unicorns everywhere. No, you're going to go through rough spots in your life, but so much of it is mindset. And if you really, really dwell in a negative, that's all you're going to get.
And that's, again, you know, up to you for how you want
to
show up how you want to craft your life. Right.
Yeah, nobody can control how, you know, you control your own thoughts.
Exactly. And here's the thing. We can't control external circumstances. Mm-hmm. So when we get stuck in traffic or when we have some challenging experience outside of ourselves, it's going to be there. But we can control the way we react to it.
Exactly.
And if we react with worry and emotion and stress and fear, we will get stuck there. And we can change that.
Now, I know you do a lot of training. You go into these companies and you train CEOs and other bigwigs and companies. What are some of the most, you know, outrageously successful things that CEOs do or people that are business owners?
The most interesting has been really to teach meditation. Only I don't call it meditation when I'm in a corporate environment. Mm-hmm. So I train them in doing productivity pauses. And literally by taking, you know, a minute or 5 minutes out of their day a couple of times a day, it just gives them more energy and it actually expands time. Mm-hmm. Because by taking that break, you literally re-energize your mind and body in a way that allows you to be more focused, really think more clearly. You can see solutions where before you may have seen only problems. And that's a lot of what happens. And even like in companies with internal communications, people get stuck in certain ways of communicating to one another and they can't seem to get themselves to step out of that and realize, wait, there is another approach. Mm-hmm. And they get stuck sometimes in their ego of having to be right. Mm-hmm. And it's really not a matter of right or wrong. Again, it's really about all of us being resources for one another, supporting one another, collaborating, cooperating, helping. And I think, you know, that's what I'm so honored to hear, Patrick, you doing with the trainings that you're doing and for your police staff, because I think that that is just such a critical part of what we've gotten away from as a culture. And it's really important that we re-embrace that and remind ourselves who we are, what we are as human beings.
Yeah. I mean, it's very important. And as far as mindfulness or meditation or whatever you want to call it, there's a reason why the U.S. military, professional sports teams everywhere are doing this. They're engaging in mindfulness and meditation. I mean, years ago, if you would have told me, hey Patrick, you want to do some meditating in the morning, I would have laughed at you and said, come on, Peggy, I'm not doing that stuff.
But and there are different approaches.
Yeah,
there's lots of different ways. In fact, I do a lot of sports training also, teaching people how to get into the zero stress zone. And I'm sure you know what the zone is.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of that effortless place that you arrive at when everything kind of comes together. Well, most people don't know how to get to that place intentionally. Mm-hmm. So I teach how to do that.
Well, and how to stay there too, as much
and
as
how
you
to
can.
Stay there.
Yeah.
How to stay there. And so you perform more optimally when you're able to achieve that. And it's very achievable. Again, it's learning skills and it's a practice. It's like people want to get fit and they join a gym.
Yeah.
Do they just go to the gym once and say, okay, I'm fit, I'm done? It's really an ongoing practice. And we have to be vigilant about awareness of our thoughts and gosh, are we living in this negativity or are we being able to embrace the positive?
It was
and
so
remembering, too, that everything eventually passes.
Yeah.
The bad is going to pass.
Oh, yeah,
of
course.
And also the good is going to pass.
Yeah.
So when the good happens, take some time to appreciate it, be grateful for it, and really be present with it.
Yeah, it was good. Back really quick, we were talking about technology. It was so funny. So I was at the gym a couple of days ago, and I'm on the treadmill, and there's a guy next to me that, you know, he's – because I have these screens now, Peggy, you know what I'm talking, you can do all kinds of things. And he's on his phone. He's just like texting away. And then he gets off the treadmill and takes a phone call. And then he gets back on and he's, you know, texting with his phone. So I'm like, is he really focused on what he's doing? Right. You know what I mean? And like you said, that's what made me think about it. You're just going to the gym. Okay, are you doing anything when you're going to the gym? Are you focusing on getting better and healthier and, you know, really in that moment? Are you in that moment, or you're being distracted like so many of us are?
And we're getting fragmented by doing that. Our energy is not really, we're not performing fully when we're functioning that way. And the other thing that I find really disturbing, and I'm probably guilty of it too, is you're out to dinner with a group of friends, and how often is everybody staring at their cell phones instead of interacting with one another at the dinner table? It's astonishing. Yeah, you go into restaurants and you can see faces just lit up by screens all over the restaurant.
You know, God bless my wife. She's so good at that, because we'll sit down, we go out to dinner a lot because we're empty nested now. And my wife will say, I mean, she didn't even have to tell me anymore, but sometimes when I, you know, I hear my, you know, because of my position, sometimes I have to answer the phone. She's like, it can wait. We're going to talk. We're going to have nice dinner. I'm going to put my cell phone away. And my, you know, she puts it in her purse. I put it in my pocket. And we have, you know, yeah, you're right. I mean, we need to have that face to face, but you're exactly right, Peggy, because you look around the room and you see how many people that, you know, a family that's just on their cell phones.
And a lot of parents I see kind of entertaining their children by giving them a cell phone
or an iPad or something like that. Yeah.
Rather, again, than keeping them involved and keeping them engaged. And look, it's not easy. I'm not saying it is, but I just think, again, as a culture, as a society, we just need to be more conscientious about taking that time to be together, to touch, to feel, to hug.
Yeah. Well, I can see why. That you inspired me after I am talking to you more, and just wonderful stuff that you're doing, Peggy.
Thank you. Well, you too. I'm very pleased to hear all the things that you're doing, Patrick.
I'm a work in progress, Peggy. Now, Peggy, you talked briefly off the air about experiences and some of the ride-alongs you've had with law enforcement officers. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. I would love to. It was really fascinating to me because it gave me incredible insights into what it feels like to be a police officer and to make the decisions that have to be made. So in one of the ride-alongs, there were a group of guys who were apparently doing drugs on the side of the road. I never saw them. I saw the trees and I saw, you know, trucks parked by the bar. I never saw these guys. And we pulled around, and of course they were terrified, and they were elderly men with missing teeth, and they had been in the bar. And it was so interesting because I was actually part of a leadership program at the time, and so the officer asked me to make the decision if these three men should be taken to jail that day. It was actually at night, so that evening. And it was quite a moment of feeling that sense of power. These three men were like on their knees begging for compassion and release from what they were facing. And it was just an incredibly powerful moment to me to sort of understand that this was just one little isolated moment in many, many, many thousands of moments for this police officer that he goes through day in, day out. And so it was just for me some insight into the sort of emotional reaction, instantaneous decision making, the quick evaluation, the abilities that an officer really needs to be trained in. And each situation really needs that critical thinking, that attention, that professionalism, the ethics, the ability to communicate. So that was really profound. And then the second experience I had, which was even more powerful for me, was a situation that was set up at one of the police districts. And it was actually as part of my Rotary Club's experience in understanding law enforcement. And they literally set up a situation where I was given a gun and shown how to use it. And it was supposed to be a traffic stop. And there was a young guy in the car. And so my first thing was to ask him for his information. And he came out of the car waving something, screaming that he was late for work, and he was really quite maniacal. And at that moment, I felt that he had grabbed perhaps a weapon from the vehicle, and that I was threatened. Again, this was all under the guise of, police officers watching. Yeah. So none of us were truly in danger except my heart, which went into overload as I pulled my weapon in that moment, thinking I was in danger. And I, at the very last moment before I shot, realized, oh, it was a cell phone he has in his hand. So it just made me realize you have nanoseconds to make a decision about life or death. And it's so nerve-wracking. So that really illustrated to me how much even more important it is for police officers to have the balance of time away from that kind of intensity and those kind of instantaneous judgments and those feelings, that they really need balance and relaxation. And the relaxation is not having a drink or watching TV. The relaxation is really more of what we talked about earlier with the spiritual mind-body relaxation, which really activates the relaxation response and cultivates a better, healthier existence for the police officers. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, of course it does. And I like how you hit on emotional wellness, because that's what it really boils down to. The hard thing with police officers, Peggy, is we are always at a state of ready. Whereas, I'll give you an example. Fire department, guys and women who work in the fire department, firefighters. So they have it down. They've mastered this, because when the bell rings in the firehouse, they get pumped up, they go out, they do their put out a fire or whatever they do, they come back to the firehouse, and then they're waiting for the bell to ring again, and then in the interim they're working out, they're taking care of themselves. Not that police officers don't do that, but my point is that we are always at that state of our senses are always heightened. Even when I'm off duty for years, I would go out to dinner and I still find myself doing this sometimes. I'm always in that mode. Okay. Where that guy coming in here, he looks kind of shady. I always have to sit with me being able to see the exits.
Right.
Yeah. So,
right.
So to your point, we have to be able to turn that off. We have to be able, officers have to turn that off at some point. I'm not saying, let your guard down completely. I'm just saying when you don't have to go to that extreme and stay in that mode of a heightened sense. Because once you're there, you got to have a balance, like we were talking about. You have to be able to come down and relax. Firefighters have it down. They're doing a lot better than law enforcement. We need to get where the problem is with law enforcement officers, they're driving around all the time. They're driving around 8 hours, 10 hours, whatever shift they're working. And then they get home and it's hard to turn it off, but we have to turn it off and we have to.
And that's it. Yeah. That's the time that they really need to work on turning it off. And again, there's skills that they can develop to turn it off. And just as you found ways to manage it when you're out, you have to be seeing the doors. I think there are certain elements that are important to just be aware of and know that that's going to give you a higher comfort level. And should there be any issues, you're ready, but it's a different level of readiness. And it's allowing yourself to still be able to be more balanced.
Exactly. And the one thing I really like, and I appreciate you doing that, Peggy, having those experiences with law enforcement, because you get to see the other side. Now, the one thing I really liked, I loved it all, but I think it would probably, I hate to assume, but I'm willing to bet that you have a different view now. When you see something come out, you see a shooting, God forbid an officer-involved shooting, you've been in that situation, not a real shooting, but you've been in that situation. You had a little bit of training, back to your point, how officers make split-second decisions. So we love to armchair quarterback in this country. And, you see something that happens with an officer, and the first instinct is, oh, the officer was in the wrong. Like you said, the officer has split second. He has nanoseconds, he or she. One of the best things I've ever heard or examples of this is, think of the NFL. I don't know if you watch football, but, if you've watched football, how many times did they, from every different angle, oh, was his foot in? Was his foot out? Was his foot in? And you'll see every different angle of that. Officers don't have that. They don't have that luxury. They don't have that luxury. People see something on a video that comes out and they snap judgment. And I've seen time and time again, officer-involved shootings where you see a different angle and it changes the story. So to your point, you got to keep an open mind. You know, you got to keep an open mind with this stuff. We're out there. We make split-second decisions. I'm not saying officers don't make wrong decisions. They do, unfortunately. We're human.
But again, I agree. They're human.
Yeah, you just got to take it. And you have a new appreciation for this. I wish more people would do that.
I do. And the other thing is, I think it's also really important that officers are aware that they're taking care of themselves mm-hmm. so that they can be fully present and not be compromised when they're reacting to a situation. Mm-hmm. In other words, sleep is really important. You need 7-8 hours of sleep.
Exactly.
If you're not getting it, you're going to be compromised and you may not make a good split-second decision. So there's a lot of things I think that go into it that really speak to our humanness and coming back to really being able to take care of ourselves so that we can perform at our peak. And it takes vigilance, and it takes working at it, and mm-hmm. it takes awareness of it, and it takes making good choices.
Yeah. Now, you work with people suffering from PTSD. Can you talk about that?
I do. In fact, one of my clients was actually held up at gunpoint in his own restaurant.
Jeez.
And fortunately, he came to me within 2 months of the event, and he was pretty much crippled at that point in terms of, you know, he would go into a grocery store with his young kids and he'd see someone that looked like the perpetrator or wore a shirt the same color and he'd break into a cold sweat and he'd have to leave all the groceries and just leave the store.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I did with him was, as we talked earlier about these habits that our brain gets into, we start developing these habit patterns of reactions to things that we see, feel, or experience, and we can start interrupting those and changing those patterns. And that's what I did with him. Mm-hmm. And so we worked on a lot of different protocols, but two of the main ones was teaching him some interrupting breathing techniques so that when he started feeling this panic attack coming on or this fear, mm-hmm. he could stop it by just calming his nervous system, making some sounds. Sounds are very calming as well, humming or, you know, just singing even tends to calm the nervous system. And then I also worked with him with sleep issues because he couldn't sleep. He was insomniac. And so that contributed to his inability to cope during the day and to manage his life. So we worked on that. And within literally 30 days, he was doing great. And now it's about 8 months later and he's phenomenal. And his wife is so grateful.
Oh, yeah. And you could do, have you ever worked with law enforcement? You ever gone into departments and helped them?
I haven't yet. I would really love to do that because I think it's a really important component. So I would definitely be open to doing that.
Yeah, it is so important. And you mentioned sleep. And I was thinking when I was a patrol officer, I worked many years, I worked graveyards. And I would, you know, come home, you know, which is very hard. You know, it throws off your rhythm and you know all that. But I would get like 4 or 5 hours of sleep when I would come home because I, you know, young family at the time. You know, be up doing other things, you know, I'd get my sleep, but it really wasn't, I mean, I think back about it as we talk, Peggy, and that was so detrimental, you know, to my health and, you know, 4 or 5 hours sleep. And then you talk about, you know, how effective am I out there? I mean, I got through it but reaction time, stuff like that come, you know, all
these
different things come into play, which, yeah, I mean, you have to think about that. And now I don't know what the answer is.
Well, you can't even think clearly
when
you're under that kind of stress and lack of sleep. And I'm telling you, one of my little secret weapons is this yoga nidra, which in 20 minutes, it's equivalent to 3 to 4 hours of sleep. And maybe I need to create one specifically for police officers because they could have it in their vehicles. They could take a 20-minute break and just listen to this, and they will really be re-engaged and feel so tremendously better. And the more you do it, the more beneficial it is.
Well, if you do that, you get a hold of me, and I would definitely spread the word about that because I think it would be very beneficial. Now, the one thing, I don't know if you know, Peggy, but more and more police departments, more and more sheriff's departments have sleep rooms now. Not all of them.
I didn't know.
But
that's great.
Yeah, a lot of departments are going towards that because before in years past, you know, no, you're not going to take a nap, you know. Nowadays, and again, not every department out there, But I know a lot of departments, they have sleep rooms. So, hey, you know, Peggy, you come in and say, hey, I need a 30-minute break. I didn't sleep well. You got it. Go over there, you know, go to sleep for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever. And then you wake up and you're you know, revitalized or whatever. But yeah, so.
And actually, if the sleep room started using my integrative relaxation.
There you go.
Recordings. There would be higher benefits because it boosts the immune system. I mean, there's just so many benefits to doing that on a regular basis. Plus, they would feel like they had 3-4 hours of sleep.
There you go. So you work on that, and then I'll push it out.
Great idea. Love it.
All right, Peggy. Any other parting words of wisdom? Anything else that you want to share with the listener before we leave?
I just am so appreciative of what you're doing, and just thank you again for giving me the opportunity to share this with others, because that's really my mission, is to bring this out to the world and to make it available, to give people skills that are going to help them live their lives better, have better relationships, better health, better everything. So thank you so much, Patrick.
Well, Peggy, you're doing awesome. I've said this many times. I'll say it again. You're doing awesome work out there. We need more people like you. Now, if people want to find you, Peggy, where can they find you?
Best place is through my website, which is peggysealfond.com, or I do have a book called Escape from Anxiety, Supercharge Your Life with Powerful Strategies from A to Z, and I have over 100 different bite-sized strategies that people can use in 5-10 minutes that are incorporated in the book to interrupt patterns of stress and fear and even pain. Mm-hmm. And so they could go to my book page, which is escapefromanxiety.com.
And we will have that linked up in the show notes of the podcast. So, Peggy, thank you so much. Much success to you in the future. If you ever need anything, please reach out to me. Reach out to my team. I'll give you their information. And, again, much success to you.
Thank you, Patrick, and the very same to you.
All right, Peggy, take care.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast, and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.